Today on Power Tips Unscripted, we talk to Jeff Borowitz with Sandler Training. Jeff has trained hundreds of remodeling salespeople, designers, and owners to help them increase sales and margins. So we've asked him to join us here to share his top 10 sales tips with you. And we'll hear what they are in just a minute.
You had me at hello.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
Hi, I'm Victoria Downing, and welcome to Power Tips Unscripted, where we talk about tips, tactics, and techniques to help you build a strong, profitable remodeling company. And I'm here with my co-host, Mark Harari.
Good morning.
How are you?
Pretty good.
Good.
Yes.
Yeah, you know,
Sales.
Sales, right? We were both sales people at one point, weren't we?
Yes, and I'm not good at it. That's why I'm here.
Yeah. You know, I managed to make a living at it for a number of years, but I was never the superstar that one would hope, you know? So we want all of our members and all of our listeners to be that superstar. So we're going to bring this awesome information to them right in a moment.
Okay. That sounds good. You sound really eager today.
I am always eager.
Aren't you?
You know, I went to a tailor yesterday to get a skirt tailored, and she said to me, "You are just so full of energy." And I thought, oh my God, I'm standing getting a skirt hemmed. So I'm enthusiastic about just about everything.
Just about everything, right?
But that's Jeff Borowitz in particular today.
Cool.
All right. So we're here to say welcome, Jeff. This is his third guest appearance on Power Tips Unscripted. And Jeff works with dozens and dozens of our members to help them improve their sales process. And today he's here to talk to us about his top 10 selling tips. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks for having me on again. I'm looking forward to this.
It's always fun. You're always an easy interview.
That's what we look for here. Easy. We don't.
Hey,
like
I'm
work.
Happy to be easy in this case.
If the less work we have to do, the better.
So Jeff, okay, top 10 sales tips. Are these just for remodelers, or can they apply to everybody?
Well, they certainly the top 10 certainly applies to everybody. But what we've done here is really take the top 10 and customize it to remodelers, for remodeling salespeople, for designers, and for owners, and even for our production folks that are in the field that have to work and talk about change orders, which is really another type of sale.
Right. Okay, good. So, like, give us some. What are these tips?
So the first one is always open and close every interaction with a client with a upfront contract, or what we call with the membership, we call a PALO. It's really an agenda setting statement to make sure that everybody's on the same page about why we're here, what we're talking about today, what the client wants to talk about. And this is really important, because when we fail to ask the client what they want to talk about, we're missing a golden opportunity, because most of our clients will tell us exactly how to sell to them if we're just smart enough to ask and stop talking.
Okay, great.
And then we can share our agenda, and we talk about as much as a client or a potential client is so happy to have you in their home, they want to know when you're going to be there, but they also want to know when you're going to leave. And putting some time on it, hey, we're going to be together for 90 minutes, and getting that understanding up front is really important, so you don't run into situations where somebody 15, 20 minutes in says, oh, you know what? I forgot to tell you, I have to go pick up Johnny from practice. So we only have 10 more minutes. I know we were supposed to have longer. So we want to know if that's going to happen. We want to know up front before the meeting starts.
Okay.
All right. And then finally, the last part is an outcome of making sure that both parties understand what decision has to be made at the end of the meeting today. And every meeting has some kind of a decision, even if it's just to have another meeting, that has to happen. And we want to agree to that up front with the client, so that there's no surprises at the end, because surprise ends up that surprise is the enemy of yes. And we want clients to say, yes, we can't be surprising them. So we want to get their agreement up front. Here's the decision we have to make today. Is that okay?
So that you said it was called PALA. What did the initial stand for?
Purpose, agenda, logistics, and outcome.
Got it. Okay.
You know, it's funny. I hear our members referring to the PALO in their roundtables meetings when they're in, you're just talking about sales and so on. So it's a little phrase that's become embedded in the roundtables culture a bit.
Woo-hoo. So that's good to hear. I'm really happy to hear that. And the other part of the PALO is at the end of the meeting, after the decision's been made to move forward to the next step, whatever that is, we need to do a closing PALO at the end of what the purpose of the next meeting is, what the client wants to make sure they talk about the next, we talk about the next meeting, what we want to make sure we talk about the next meeting, when that next meeting is going to happen, who's going to be there, what time's it going to start, what time's it going to end, who's responsible for bringing what or who with them, mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And what decision will have to be made at the end of that meeting. So that, again, there's no surprises. And it just becomes, if you do an opening PALO and a closing PALO, you will be so surprised at how much more smoothly your sales meetings run.
All right, great. All right, that was a great sales tip. Now, how about another one?
Another one would be to, you get to choose when you're going to be uncomfortable.
That's an interesting one.
In every sales process, as a salesperson, in every time you're dealing with a client, there's going to be some point that you're going to be uncomfortable. Whether it's talking to the client about their pain and getting their pains or problems from them, and asking the tough questions that will make the client a little uncomfortable. Some people are afraid to ask those questions, and when we miss out on asking those questions about their pains and problems, and we slip into more comfortably doing what I call the dream questions. Instead of saying, what is it about your kitchen that frustrates you, which is a pain-based question. Instead, a lot of remodelers really struggle. They'll ask the question, tell me what your dream kitchen looks like. Mm-hmm. It's much harder to sell to the dream than it is to sell to solve the current pains that the client has.
All right.
And so when I say you get to choose when you're going to be uncomfortable, you can choose. You can be uncomfortable early on and having that pain discussion, which is uncomfortable for you, uncomfortable for the client. Or you can choose to be uncomfortable later when you tried to sell to the dream and you can't get to the dream.
I see.
And you're going to be uncomfortable later in the process. Personally, I would much rather be uncomfortable early in the process, because we want to limit, if the client doesn't have pain that we can solve, we want to know that up front so that we can disqualify them and go find somebody else who's going to say yes and design agreement or a remodeling contract.
Right. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. All right. Let's go for number three.
Number three is what we call in Sandler matching and mirroring. It's really important that we match and mirror the people we're talking to, both in body language and in our tonality and our rate of speech, mm-hmm. Right? Because if the simple reality here is people tend to buy from people they're comfortable with. And if we have a neighbor who, she's very touchy when she talks to anybody. You know anybody like that?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah. And I mean, my wife sometimes feels that after she has a conversation with this neighbor that she says, I feel like I've been molested. Because she's so touchy.
It's hard to match that, isn't it?
And so we don't necessarily want to match that, right? But right. If somebody is standing at a distance from you and you're one of those touchy people, you're going to make them feel very uncomfortable if they're not a touchy person. So you always want to if you're a touchy person, let somebody else touch your arm before you reach back and touch theirs. Right. And that's an example of doing some matching mirroring. If they are somebody who talks who talks super loud or talks in rapid fire succession, you should match and mirror that because it really, really helps.
Okay. And from a, you know, from a psychological perspective, I assume it's because we like people that are like us.
Yeah, that's so exactly it.
You're kind of seeing yourself in the person you're talking to.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's the salesperson's job to make the other person comfortable. It's not our job. It's not the client's job to change their, to change themselves to match us. It's our job to be that chameleon and go match and mirror what we're seeing from our client. And in some ways that can be a little bit exhausting for salespeople, right? Because they've, you know, you might go from the your first call at 9 a.m. with a client that is, you know, very stern, very formal, to your next call that's at 11 o'clock or 11:30, and they might be very loosey-goosey, playful, and you've got to adjust just on the fly.
Right.
And match and mirror the person you're talking to. And by the way, matching and mirroring also extends to using the client's words back at them.
How do you mean?
So when a client will say, will use some kind of phrase, a lot of times salespeople tend to paraphrase it back and put it in their own words and say it back. Right. Instead, match and mirror the client's own words back to them. Because when you do that, then you're using their words. They're all, you know, they're already comfortable with their words. Mm-hmm. And here's the most amazing thing I'll say about this. People never argue with their own words.
Really?
They will often argue with yours.
Oh, okay. That's great. That's great. Why cause an argument if you don't have to, right?
Yeah, right.
Avoid it. Okay, good.
So number four mm-hmm. is tonality matters. And
okay,
by that,
you already talked a little bit about matching tonality. So what do you, what is this one? How is this one different?
This one's like, I call it the late night FM DJ voice. Yeah. You know, remember, you ever listen to late night FM radio, like at 2 a.m.?
Not often, thank God.
Oh, yeah.
Not often, but you've done it, right?
Absolutely.
And the guy's got this, it's always the guy or gal, she's got, they've got that silky smooth voice.
Yes.
Right? And so when I say late night FM DJ voice, I want you to have that silky smooth sound of your voice. But more importantly, I want you to measure your rate of speech when you talk, because yes, we want to match and mirror a little bit of rate of speech, but a lot of times what happens when you run into a roadblock in your sale, when somebody says something you don't expect, or they tell you they're talking to two other remodeling companies, or they ask you the question, the favorite question everybody gets, right, is, well, why should we do business with you versus somebody else? What's so special about your company? And what happens here is, you know, the salespeople who struggle a little bit tend to speed up their rate of speech when they answer that.
Ah.
And when they speed up, they, you know, most people talking about 122 words per minute in America. That's the average. But when they get that unexpected question, the salespeople who struggle will actually speed up to about 154 words per minute. Mm-hmm. And when they speed up, it makes them seem, it makes them come across as flustered and lacking confidence.
Ah, okay.
And so instead, what I want you to do is take a deep breath and slow your rate of speech down. And mm-hmm. if you were at 122, go down to 100 and slow it down. Because when you slow down your rate of speech, you sound more confident. You sound more competent. And you sound more comfortable, which will make your client less guarded.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. I like that.
You know, and I like what you did in the act of slowing down your rate. You had longer pauses between ideas, and I assume that's part of it too.
Absolutely.
Pauses are a great tool in general, right?
Yes, absolutely. Salespeople tend to be afraid of, and maybe that's tip number 11. Don't be afraid of silence.
Free tip for everybody.
Silence is your friend, right? A pause. There's nothing wrong with a pause in a conversation. When you pause, a lot of times your client will think that you are giving careful thought and consideration to what they just said. Mm-hmm. And not just coming off with some off the cuff or canned response.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
It also doesn't silence also add a little bit of pressure to the sale close as well. I remember.
Oh, yeah.
When I was a salesperson, it would be you push the contract and the pen over and then you just stop and wait and not say anything.
Yeah, there you can certainly do that, and that works. Also, when you want to ask, there's a press technique that interviewers do called the silent lamb. And in the silent lamb, an interviewer will ask the interviewee a tough question, and then the interviewer will stop talking, and they'll stop talking for up to 10 seconds. And it's really amazing because over 90% of the time, right around 7 seconds, the interviewee who doesn't want to answer that question feels so much pressure that they start to talk anyways. And it's something they actually train interviewers on, how to do this. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's funny, I train a large global PR company, and they teach their clients, who are the ones being interviewed, how to resist the silent lamb. Yeah. And most of them still struggle to do it, even with training.
That's great. That's great.
It reminds me of Glengarry Glenn Ross at the end.
Yes.
The machine just talks about he stood there holding that pen for an eternity in silence. Yeah. Anyway, all right. So number five, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Number five is practice positivity. You know, mindset really, really matters. And when we all have a baseline intelligence level when we have a neutral attitude, right? And when we're positive, when we have a positive attitude, it's amazing. We feed dopamine into our brain mm-hmm. with positivity, and that dopamine makes our neurons in our brains fire faster. And you get this neurochemical reaction that actually they've done studies and shows that when you're in a positive mindset, you are 31% smarter than you are in a neutral mindset. You're a 31% better problem solver.
Wow.
And you're 31% more persuasive.
Ah, there you go. Just going into it with a positive attitude.
Yes.
Wow.
That's easy. We can do that.
And guess what? They studied it also. When you have a negative frame of mind or a negative mindset going into it, you deny the dopamine to your brain. It makes your neurons fire slower, and that you lack that neurochemical reaction. And they found that you are 31% dumber when you're and 31% less intelligent, 31% less good at problem solving, and you are much, much less persuasive.
Okay, so good argument there.
But here's the great part. You ever heard anybody say, well, you know, Vic, you just got to be positive, right? And Vic probably doesn't ever have anybody say that, because as she said at the beginning, the tailor even notices how positive she is. Vic, your daughter went to University of Michigan, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when she was growing up, did you ever tell her, oh, you just got to be more positive?
Probably.
Yeah. And so the truth of the matter is, a lot of people say that, but is it easy to go from negative to positive?
No.
No.
No, no, no.
And so what I'm going to tell you is, if you're negative, first work on getting to neutral.
Right.
Just by going from negative to neutral, you're 31% smarter than you were negative.
Right, right.
Right. So that delta between positive and negative is 62%. That's really a lot.
Yes, it is.
You're also 31% less of a blankety blank.
Yeah, that's true too. And so let me give you everybody this tip. All you need to do to help yourself and start getting that dopamine firing is go in front of a mirror. and smile. Mm-hmm. The working the muscles in your face have shown, it's been shown that that muscular move of smiling will fire dopamine. Your body starts to fire dopamine, and you get that hit of dopamine into your brain. It helps the neurons kick in, mm-hmm. and you can move from negative to neutral.
Okay, all right.
Just by going in and doing a little bit of smiling in a mirror.
Cool,
Jeff. Real quick before you go to number six, I wanted to just tell everybody that's listening: you've just agreed to be one of our 27 speakers at the summit in September.
Yeah,
I'm excited for that.
Me too.
So, yeah, it's going to be great. And so to let everybody know, the summit has been locked in. It has been set. The Remodeler Summit for 2022 is going to be at Gaylord National Harbor in Washington, D.C. It's going to be September 21st to the 22nd. And the tickets are going to go on sale in April, but we're going to have a pre-sale. If that ticket's going, you know, what pre-sale? It's like pre-boarding. But it's going to be like a private sale only for people that are like listening to this show in our community are going to have access to that. So for the pre-sale only, the tickets are going to be on sale for that day only for 50% off. So
wow,
if anybody wants to check that out, it's a secret for our listeners and our community. So go to remodelersummit.com and get on that list so you can get access to that one day sale. So, cool. And Jeff, among 26 other speakers, are going to be there, and we have some great ones lined up.
Very much so. Very exciting. Yeah. And it's a beautiful facility.
Oh, my gosh. It's good. You should go to remodelersummit.com just to see what the facility looks like. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, just a quick aside, but we were excited to have you there, Jeff.
Yep.
So
I'm excited to be there. I went to the last one in September. It was in Phoenix, and that was outstanding. And I can't wait for Washington D.C. this fall.
Yeah, right. it's gonna be awesome. So number six.
Number six is when you're asking questions, avoid asking questions that begin with who, when, or why. Okay. Because the reason we want to avoid asking questions that begin with who, when, or why is because those are questions that are defensive in nature. And it's because when we were growing up, you know, Mark, were you ever, when you were growing up, did you touch the thermostat in the house when you were a kid?
Not if I wanted to make it to the next day.
That's right. Right. Because if mom or dad woke up in the morning and the thermostat was set at 76 degrees, what was the first question they were going to ask?
Yeah. It's all about what did you do?
Yeah.
Who touched it?
Who moved the thermostat to 76 degrees? And that's when, Mark, do you have any brothers and sisters?
Yeah. Younger brother.
Yeah. So that's when you told your parents that the third child they didn't know they had did it, which was right. Not me. Yeah.
Right.
And so question from all of us had the same childhood. Right. And so who, when, and why are questions that prompt a defensive response just from growing up in our childhood. And it puts the client on the defensive, throws their guard walls up. We don't want to do that. We want to ask questions that begin with the words what and how. Because when we ask questions that begin with what and how, it opens up imagination. And it makes and they become more open. And when they become more open about when they're answering the question, they're giving you more information-rich and longer answers, which is very, very valuable to you. And that's how you gather information from the client. And by the way, we want to use what and how questions to get the client to be more talkative. And when we ask good what and how questions, they'll give us all of the pain and problems that they have, which in the end, the pains that we get and what we call, you know, the problems that clients have in Sandler, we call pains. And the more pain we get, it's like lubrication for the sales process. It just reduces friction and makes it easier to get to a signed agreement.
Great. Okay. I like it. All right. Tip number seven, right?
Oh, yeah. Tip number seven. This is my favorite. This is one of my favorite ones. Always use the F-bomb.
Ah!
Not that one. The F-bomb I'm talking here. The F-bomb I'm talking about is the word fair, F-A-I-R. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing. When you incorporate the use of the word fair into your sales and into your conversations, every client that you go see as a remodeler, they want to make sure that they're being treated fairly. It's their main concern. Am I getting a fair deal? Am I being treated fairly? And it's their number one fear. And the more you can get them to agree that things you're talking about are fair, the less fearful they become of that and the less guarded they become. And once they've agreed that something's fair, they'll spend the rest of their time with you trying to look for how you're being fair versus worried about whether or not they're getting a fair deal.
Okay. All right.
And so there's a company out there called Gong Labs. They're an AI company. All they do is record sales calls.
Okay.
And they analyze them. And they've millions of sales calls. And they've determined that the top performers, the top sales performers across every industry use the word fair in a conversation with a client on an average of 2 times per conversation.
Okay. All right. Great.
The bottom salespeople use the word fair 0.2 times per conversation, meaning it takes 10 conversations for them to use the word fair twice versus a top performer who uses it twice in one conversation.
That's really interesting. Just the use of that term can affect the results that much.
It's amazing because, remember we talked tip number one about always use a PALO?
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the end, if at the end of it, or I'll just skip the P and the A and the L for the example I'm about to give. But if our agreement is, hey, Vic, at the end of our time together today, we'll just have to make a decision about whether or not we want to move forward. If you decide that we're not a good fit for you, would you be nice enough to let me know?
Yes.
Yeah. And Vic, if I come to the conclusion that we're just not a good fit for your project, is it okay if I tell you that and give you a referral to somebody who would be?
Yes.
And if we both agree that we want to move forward, Vic, then we'll go ahead and take the next step in our process, which is to sign a design agreement that has a nominal fee attached to it. Does that sound fair?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You see how I worked that fair in right at the end?
Yeah. Okay. Great. Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Tip 8.
Tip 8. And this is the one that I think most remodelers mess up on.
Okay.
And it's the one that causes them so much heartburn, so much grief, and so much stress. Never give a budget number to the client before they give you their budget number.
Now, why do you say that?
Because most clients, first of all, we walk in and we give a ballpark number, right? Well, I think this kitchen's going to be $150,000. How do you know that? I mean, if you're using historical precedent, which a lot of remodelers do, is that even relevant with today's price increases?
Yeah, probably not.
Right. And I can't tell you the number of people that call me and say, Jeff, I got a problem. I gave him a budget. I gave him a ballpark range of $150,000. And now it's coming in at $240,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've killed your credibility at that point.
Right.
Right. They're not going to trust you. And it's hard for them to trust anything you say after that.
Yep.
And the reality is most people want to give that budget because they're afraid the budget the client's going to give them is so low. Right.
Okay.
Because clients get their budgets really three places. They get their budgets from HGTV,
mm-hmm.
right? And those we know are not accurate.
Mm-hmm.
They get their budget from Google, also not reliable.
Right.
And then third place, they get the budgets from friends who have remodeled. And guess what? Friends who have remodeled don't always tell the truth about how much they spent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had some friends, we remodeled our kitchen. We had some friends over and they asked us how much we spent on remodeling the kitchen. And Molly said, oh, it was about $100,000. It wasn't. And after they left, I said to Molly, why'd you lie to her? And Molly said, well, I don't want them to think we spent that kind of money on the kitchen. I don't want them to think we have that kind of money. Mm. And so people don't tell the truth for different reasons.
Right.
Right. And so understand clients, when they come in, it will take them months to settle on a final budget. That's what the design process is for. Mm-hmm. And what you want to know, what we really want to know is the budget conversation in our first call when we're doing discovery is a one-way discussion, them to us. Mm-hmm. And don't freak out if the client says, well, I think it's going to be $85,000. I think we're comfortable spending $85,000. Don't freak out because you think the kitchen's going to be $200,000. So instead, ask some questions. Remember I said ask what and how questions?
Uh-huh.
When a question we might want to ask there is, oh, wow. Okay. How did you arrive at that number? Mm-hmm. Find out how they got there.
Right.
Is it the number they saw on television? Is it a number a neighbor told them about? Or is it the number they just have in the bank?
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Cool.
And then the next question we want to ask is, and I call this the magic budget question, is if that turns out not to be enough money to get you everything you want and need, where will we find the rest? And the key there is the we. Mm-hmm. Right? We want to be pulling on the same side of the rope as they are. And when I say we, let me be very clear to everybody listening to this. I am in no way, shape, or form advocating that you ever discount.
Right. Totally agree with that.
The we is a we of the client and us. Where will we find it? It may be reducing scope.
Right.
Or magically, clients may have some stock that they forgot to mention that they could sell to add to their budget. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or okay. Maybe they're willing to take out a home equity loan. Right. But the we is a generic we.
Yes.
It is not about us cutting the project or us cutting our prices.
Right. All right. Tip number nine
is never answer an unasked question.
How do you mean?
Well,
Vic, pay
attention. Salespeople, we tend to have this strange filter in our heads. Mm-hmm. That we take statements that people make and we make them questions. For example, when a client says, oh, well, that was more than I was hoping to spend. And we start to justify, defend, and explain our price. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did they ask a question?
No.
Why are we answering it?
Right. Uh-huh. That makes me, I just watched I used to watch The West Wing long ago when it was out, and I saw a rerun of it just the other day. And the office, the White House counsel was talking to the press secretary, preparing her to take the stand. And he says to her, randomly, he said, do you know what time it is? And she goes, 11:45. And he says, you need to stop doing that. Stop answering questions that weren't asked of you. Now I'm going to ask you again, do you know what time it is? And she says, yes.
Oh, I remember that episode. I was a huge fan of The West Wing. I remember that episode.
And that was great because, you know, of course, but it just really struck me because I'm thinking somebody says, well, do you know what time it is? The answer is yes, not answer the time.
Right. That's funny.
Anyway, sorry. Pops in my head.
There's a funny story. I heard Larry King tell this story once. Larry King was on a dais at a speaking event with Yogi Berra, the Hall of Fame Yankees mm-hmm. catcher. And Larry had forgotten his watch in his hotel room. And he looked at Yogi and said, do you know what time it is? And Yogi says, you mean right now?
That's great. I love Yogi Berra.
All right. Tip 10.
Tip number 10 is apologize tactically. In today's society, We overuse the word sorry. We're sorry for everything. We're sorry. Sorry, I'm a minute late to our Zoom meeting. Sorry to have to ask you this question. Sorry to bother you, but I do have one more question. Any of that sound familiar?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Instead, and so we use sorry so much that we actually end up diluting the word, that it has no impact and no meaning. Mm-hmm. And so instead of using sorry all the time, you can use, somebody came up with the idea of using the word, remember the word pardon? Mm-hmm. Oh, pardon my tardiness, right? Mm-hmm. Pardon my lateness, right? But if you're a minute late to Zoom, don't even apologize. Just get on to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? But when you save the apology, save the sorry for when you really need it, mm-hmm. it will have much more impact. And so when they're asking you, well, can you cut the price by $7,000 or $17,000? You can come back and say, I'm really sorry. I really wanted to be able to get to that number, but it just wasn't doable. I'm really sorry. The word sorry has a lot more impact if it's the first time they've heard you say it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you are putting yourself in, there's a psychology term called a drama triangle, where there's at one tip of the triangle, there's somebody that's the aggressor. Mm-hmm. And at another tip, there's somebody who's the victim. And then at the other tip, there's somebody who's the rescuer. Mm-hmm. When you come in and you use your sorry there, and it's the first time they've heard it, you're putting yourself in the victim mode. And the client either can choose to be the aggressor, or they can choose to rescue you. More times than not, they'll choose to rescue you. And you're actually making your negotiation easier by having not used the word sorry all the way through the sales process. Okay. And saving it for when you really need it. And so that's what I mean by apologize tactically.
Well, pardon me, Jeff, but it's time for the lightning round. Are you ready for that?
I am ready for that.
And now, here's the Remodeler's Advantage Lightning Round.
It's a trap!
All right, I'm putting 60 seconds on the clock. Here we go. What is your favorite business book and why?
My favorite business book is Asking Questions the Sandler Way, because I think it's one of the best books out there on what is probably the most important sales technique, which is to ask good questions.
If you weren't a sales trainer to remodelers, what do you think you'd be doing?
I wish I was playing, I would be playing Major League Baseball, but I couldn't do that. So I guess I'm stuck being a sales trainer.
What are you not very good at?
Not very good at organization and cleanliness, as my wife and daughter told me last night when they came over to the office.
Well, this next one's interesting. Your room, your desk, or your car, which do you clean first?
Interestingly, it's always my car. I am fanatical about the car. The car's always clean, inside and out.
Name something you refuse to share with others.
What I call my left column thoughts.
Okay. What was your favorite sitcom growing up?
The Brady Bunch.
Nice. Hey, this has been great, Jeff. Thank you for sharing all these awesome tips. Now, there's a couple things before we let you go. One is, how do people learn more about you?
Well, they can go to the Remodeler's Advantage SAG page and look up our Sales Edge program. They can also look at our increasing profits through better client management class for designers and non-salespeople. They could also look at our When the Phone Rings training for lead intake people to help you do better at getting lead intake and getting qualified leads.
All right, great.
Yeah, all those can be found on the website.
Yes.
We'll put links to that too in the show notes.
Okay, great. So now, before I let you leave, I want you to share with our listening audience your five words of wisdom and why they resonate with you.
Sure. People always spend money emotionally, meaning that sales are made emotionally and justified intellectually. And I think that that resonates with me, because most people think they're selling to the adult in the room. In reality, most clients make their decisions emotionally through needs, wants, and desires, and which is a which are all child personas, thoughts. They live in our child persona, our child voice in our head, and so we. The only time the adults in the room, the intellectual portion is in the room, is when we talk about money, to verify money and to sign contracts. The rest of the time, when we're talking about problems, needs, wants, and desires, the child's in the room, and people will spend money to solve emotional needs. They don't spend money. Nope. Let me be very clear. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I want to spend $185,000 on a new kitchen. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says that, but they will spend money to solve the emotional needs they have as a result of having to deal with the kitchen that they have. Mm-hmm. And so when we can get to the emotional needs or pain, third level pain, that's when people will spend money. So that's why people always spend money emotionally resonates with me.
All right. Great. Thank you so much. This has been awesome. It was great having you on again. And we are super looking forward to seeing you at the summit in September.
Looking forward to being there. Thanks a lot for asking me to be on.
You bet. Appreciate it, Jeff. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Man, that was a lot of good information in one short podcast, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yes, it was.
The pauses are great. And you know what? Pauses are great in almost everything in life except for on a podcast.
Yes.
you don't want pauses on a podcast.
The one that stood out to me the most was the use of the word fair. Who would have thought?
Yeah, fair. You know, there was a couple of those things I remember from very similar to the what's the book? Never Split the Difference.
Ah, yes.
He refers to fair in that book, and he explicitly talks about that FM late night DJ voice.
Really? Yes. Yeah. Wow.
And so that was ringing true to me there, but it was very funny.
Yes. Really. You and almost got it there.
Almost?
Get a little deeper.
I just don't quite have it.
Yeah.
So, and the mirroring thing, I've noticed people in general. I've noticed people accidentally start mirroring other people, you know, and I've done it before. I've caught myself getting like a southern twang or something in my speech just from being around somebody that's talking that way.
Right.
And it's kind of funny. He said, you know, be a chameleon.
Right, right.
I'm a karma chameleon. I come and go. Yeah.
All right. This was good.
that was fun. We want to thank Jeff. And definitely check out today when you get out of your car, get home, get wherever you're going, go to remodelersummit.com. Take a look at where this amazing venue is. And you can see a couple of the keynote speakers. We've got a couple surprise announcements coming too. And get on that list so that you can exclusively get the only time we're going to offer them at 50% off. Mm-hmm. That's the only day we're going to do it. So don't call me a week later or a month later saying, hey, can I get that 50% off price? Because it's not happening. So remodelersummit.com, check that out. So that was a great episode. We want to thank Jeff for being here and sharing his 10 tips for remodelers. And we want to thank you for listening week in and week out. I'm Mark Harari.
And I'm Victoria Downing. See you next time.
This has been another episode of Power Tips Unscripted, the remodeler's guide to business. Visit www.remodelersadvantage.com to learn more about Roundtables, our world-class peer advisory program. There you can also find information about our business consulting services, upcoming live events, and much more. And finally, don't forget to subscribe to the show and comment on iTunes. Thanks for listening.
It's a beautiful day. Whoa, whoa, whoa. It's a beautiful day. Whoa, whoa, whoa. It's a beautiful day.